Hello, I'm Eamon.
I'm Conrad.
I'm Michael.
And we are...
Mega City Film Club.
The Film Club has returned, and we welcome Michael Crowder to the Film Club. Michael, you're a veteran from episode 213, Leviathan, and most importantly, 243, Transformers, which we actually recorded face-to-face at Thought Bubble a few years ago.
Yeah, that's right. That was a good fun.
Well, welcome aboard the Film Club. You are, of course, our expert on the Transformers, particularly in those great Marvel UK comics written by Simon Furman. And Conrad, we were just saying, we think the last Film Club we did was the 70s, the Sweeney.
Absolutely, when things, yeah, yeah.
Things were very brown. So
it's very true.
You'll be glad to hear that the Film Club is moving into the 80s, getting colourful, sticking with robots in disguise as we go straight to...
Film 1, Transformers, the movie.
From 1986, written by Ron Friedman, directed by Nelson Shin, starring the voices of Judd Nelson, Leonard Nimoy, Eric Idle, and the famous pub quiz question in his last ever film role, Orson Welles. Now, before we get into the film plot, Michael, you're our expert. Give us a little bit of the context and the background of Transformers and how they made it to the big screen.
Yeah, no problem. So, I mean, the idea of transforming robot toys comes from Japan. And Hasbro in the US struck a partnership deal with Takara to license two different toy lines and bring them over to the US. So the Diaclone toys were the cars and vehicles, so Optimus Prime and Jazz and everyone that would become those toys. And then the Micromen were human-sized things like Megatron and Soundwave, which is why those toys have no connection to the others in terms of size. Plus the Minibots were Micromen as well, so Bumblebee and Cliffjumper and those. Hasbro needed a story to sell these toys, and so they went straight to Marvel. Initially to the great Denny O'Neill, but his pitch was rejected, but he did name Optimus Prime and then handed over to Bob Budiansky, who wrote the bios and the names of all of the Transformers that we know and love, and then started work immediately on the comic. This gave the Transformers a fairly consistent characterization across the comics, the cartoon, and then the film, and a fairly coherent shared universe between all of those things. As they expanded, they pulled in toys from other Japanese toy companies, which is why some of the Transformers just don't look the same as others. So something like Jetfire or Shockwave, you just bear no resemblance to the other Transformers. They're just different toy companies. And Bob Budiansky just kept having to give them new personalities and writing them into the stories. The UK comics come out pretty much the same time as the US and initially were just reprints of those US stories. But once it became weekly, they were just going too fast and outstripped the American source material. And this led to UK-only stories. And as you say, Eamon, pretty quickly, Simon Furman becomes the lead writer with a rotating set of artists that we'd recognize from these podcasts of Jeff Anderson, Jeff Cena Sr., Barry Kitson, and even at one point, a one-off from Ron Smith. I was reading these comics as a child, and I wasn't really aware of why there was a difference, but I was very clear of the difference between what I now know was the US stories and the UK stories. The US stories would tend to be, and here's some new toys doing some stuff. And the UK stories didn't have that pressure. So we're sort of more focused on character development and stories. And then all of that leads to 1986, when the Transformers movie comes out. Peak Transformers.
Peak Transformers. And Conrad, before we get into the synopsis, you were saying beforehand that you remember seeing this at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Were you big into Transformers?
You know, Transformers are like maybe a year or two before my time, I guess. I end up being more like a Ninja Turtles or I guess Hero Turtles for Brits and like G.I. Joe and Ghostbusters and stuff like that. But Transformers still very much a big, like, while not my main obsession or whatever as a kid, very much my, like, this movie was huge when I was a kid. And, you know, we watched it all the time, watched it on a video, all that stuff. I've got really vivid memories of one summer, a couple kids, like, reenacting scenes from this movie around the pool or something like that. like it was like a passion play or something, you know. The cool kid playing Optimus Prime, handing over the AllSpark, and it's like, oh, that's so cool. Like, look at this stuff, you know. That so like a lot of some fond memories of this one for sure.
Comrade, you're showing your age. It's not the AllSpark, comrade. It's the Creation Matrix.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I'm sorry. It's very, like, again, because it's not my main focus, like, these, like, you know, I get all the terms mixed up. So there's some Michael Bay mixed in with this more classic stuff. I apologize profusely.
Well, it is complicated. I found it slightly hard to keep up with. But look, by 1986, as Michael says, they've been a toy line. They've been a TV animated cartoon. They've been a cartoon comics. They make it to the big screen. So, Michael, over to you again. What is the basic setup of Transformers the movie?
Yeah, so let's bear in mind, I'm a couple of years older than Comrade, so I'm hugely biased. I went to the cinema to see this. I was 8 years old, so this was sweet spot for me. My sister took me to the cinema. So, I mean, this film starts with a bang. The animation quality is immediately higher than the cartoon, with sort of deliberate choices being made rather than just the very basics. It's the future. It's 2005. You're immediately told the Decepticons have won and they're in charge of Cybertron. There's this giant planet coming called Unicron that in the first few seconds commits genocide and eats a planet. Autobots have a city on Earth. Spike has a son. And pretty quickly, characters that you know and love start being slaughtered immediately. And we're off to the races. So in terms of the film, Unicron is the looming threat for Cybertron. There's no real explanation of why. The Decepticons attack Autobot City Earth, and Optimus Prime and Megatron fight to the death and are both left close to death. And this is all pretty early on. Everybody you know and love is dying all over the place. And then the big moment is the death of Optimus Prime, which shocked everybody. So he names Ultra Magnus as his new leader. Then he turns gray and he dies. And all the little kids cry in the cinema. The Decepticons throw their dying out of the spaceship to save fuel, and Megatron floats into Unicron, gets turned into Galvatron, becomes Leonard Nimoy, disintegrates Starscream as the slaughter continues, and then for the rest of the film, really everybody's chasing each other around the galaxy, trying to get hold of the Matrix, either for or to attack Unicron, and it ends with them all inside Unicron. Hot Rod becomes Rodimus Prime, opens the Matrix, and Unicron is destroyed.
And Unicron, up until that point, was like a sort of Galactus-style threat for the Transformers?
Yeah, he starts off as a planet, and then at a certain point in the film, transforms into an absolutely enormous robot, because everything has to transform so big again that he can eat moons, he can eat planets, and the Transformers are all fighting inside him. At one point, the huge Transformer spaceship flies through his eye. That's how big he is.
And a couple of years before this film, I'd been in a cinema hearing children crying when Leonard Nimoy's Spock died. And here we have, as you say, we've got Optimus Prime dying. Big, big shocker.
Yeah, and I think, you know, lots of it, if you watch people talking about it, everyone talks about what a mistake it was, how important Optimus Prime is. But, I mean, it's a mistake in the extent that they're still selling Optimus Prime toys and he's still in every Transformers thing that comes out. But on the other hand, the fact that everyone's still talking about how Optimus Prime died 40 years ago, I don't think it can be that much of a mistake, right? Because it's really stuck with people.
So, Conrad, nostalgic times for you. You were quite key when we put this one on the list. As you say, you watched this a lot as a kid. What do you make of the movies, particularly when you've gone back to rewatch it for this?
There's some bold choices in this movie, for sure. I think, as Michael mentioned, like, you know, they kill a lot of characters in this movie. Of course, like your main hero, Optimus Prime. I remember hearing that Optimus Prime died as a kid, like, because I didn't see this movie in the theater, but sort of like I'd watched the cartoon. So yeah, and like even just hearing about it, it's like literally like the first celebrity death that I like experienced as a kid, I think, was Optimus Prime. They also kill like Starscream, who's like one of the big villains, one of my favorites, because he's the same voice as like Cobra Commander from G.I. Joe, just this big sniveling baddie who gets like completely wiped out. They kill all these guys, and that's a big move for a movie for kids, and a movie for kids like specifically built to sell toys. Well, to kind of be, you could imagine kids saying, you can't play with that one. He's dead. It doesn't count, you know, or something like that. And definitely going back to it, and especially, I mean, I guess spoilers, but having watched Transformers after I watched GoBots, you really get a sense that there's effort in this. Like, it's not just like a cash in, I guess. Like, there's efforts to make this movie look good, to like have the animation be really, really cool and have things, really interesting stuff happens. Stuff like the sound design and things are really neat. And yet it just seems like a very, like, you know, well-made, classy movie, basically. So much of it's just really fun. Like, I don't know, like all the rockin' 80s soundtrack and stuff like that. You've Got the Touch, always really fun. And then, like, always makes me think of, like, when they sing the song unironically in, like, Boogie Nights or something like that. Like, you know, there's a lot that's fun in this movie. And that seems like effort was made in something that could very easily be a cheap cash in, I guess.
Michael, of course, you're the Transformers expert. You saw it in the cinema when it came out. What do you make of the movie sort of 40 years on?
Yeah, look, I agree. I agree with Conrad. I'd say it's a cash in to the extent that now you look back on it and you say, okay, they killed all those toys, so we had to buy more toys. And so they could introduce loads of more things for us to buy. But they've done it in an artful way. Most of the new characters are interesting. The concepts are interesting. The Quintessons, you know, are fun. The Sharktacons are fun. There's a lot going on. Admit, as a story, most of it is shoot, shoot, run, run, shoot, shoot, run, run. But if you care about the people on the run and you're interested in the new characters who are doing the chasing, I do think it works. And I agree with Conrad. It is, again, no spoilers for GoBots, but they have put some effort in here. And it is a huge step up from the cartoon that you were watching on a Saturday morning.
In terms of the effort they put in, one of the things, of course, is they've got some great voice actors in there. Mike, what did you make of the performances behind the robots?
Yeah, as you say, the Orson Welles of it is probably the place to start. And there's stories of how engaged or not he was with it. But I think he's doing a good job, particularly, you know, given where he was in his life. He does carry that off. And Leonard Nimoy, I think, is great as Galvatron, particularly as you wouldn't necessarily know it was him if you weren't looking out for it, right? He's not just doing his voice. He is putting on a voice, whereas Eric Idle is clearly a robot version of Eric Idle.
Very much so. Conrad, Orson Welles. When did Orson Welles stop trying? Was it in sometime in the 1950s, do you think?
No, I you know, listen, I'm not the greatest Orson Welles-ologist, but I'm like, you know, he's very much just like, whoa, Orson Welles, you know, into the 80s, surely, as he starts doing like the wine commercials and things like that, you know.
Yes, yes, where he famously, he was sampling the products, I think, during the takes. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is very, and like, the thing that I think is fun is just that this does sort of create this, I think Orson Welles in Transformers does create this like precedent that you've got to have like an older, like established film star to be a character when they make these cartoon movies, I guess. I'm thinking of like, you know, like Telly Savalas and GoBots, as we'll get to, or even like in the G.I. Joe movie where there's a big bad guy played by like Burgess Meredith or something like that. Like, you know, you've got to have somebody who dads will recognize as an actor when you make these movies, basically. That I think is pretty funny.
And you've mentioned the soundtrack. I mean, Michael, you know, this is a big part of it as well, isn't it? The 1980s soundtrack, the You've Got the Power song is sort of synonymous with this film, isn't it?
Yeah, you've got the Dare song and the You've Got the Touch song are the ones that really stand out. But all the way through, it's rocking music. And again, it's another step up from the cartoon. It's another thing that separates it from what you were watching in small chunks on a Saturday morning, that they have put a full film soundtrack over this.
But despite them stepping up the animation style, the stories, the voices, the music, didn't do terribly well at the time. Didn't make its money, did it?
Yeah, it was generally believed to be a bomb, but it has over time gone on to rise in people's estimations. And I think that's because of the importance it had to those people who did go and watch it, because of, you know, your Prime dying, your Starscream dying, as Conrad was saying. These are things that really stuck with people. Whether you could go back and watch it now, have it without having any of that knowledge, Eamon, maybe you can tell us, but for somebody who already had a deep laugh off the characters, knowledge of the characters, it really works, and it really mattered. I guess that's what really stands it above other films of its type, in that it was making a change. Optimus Prime died in front of our eyes, albeit in the future, and he turned grey. Starscream shatters into a bazillion pieces, and then Galvatron crushes his crown. These are moments that stick with children who are now in their 40s.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as you say, it's gone on to have a much better reputation than perhaps it initially got. And this is sort of huge nostalgia stuff, Conrad. Great to see it again after all these years.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's funny, actually. I think as we're recording this, Hasbro has just announced a big, 40th anniversary tour for the movie. After I watched this one, I saw a YouTube video that was literally from, yesterday, that was sort of them, they're pitching the 40th anniversary as, the apology tour or something. We're sorry for ruining your childhood by killing Optimus Prime and stuff like that. I think, like a lot of kids' movies, this one has just a really long tail, I think, that sort of, makes you stick with it, sells, again, the way I experienced it mostly was as a VHS cassette tape that a kid would watch every day or something like that. I know I did that with the G.I. Joe movie, which is a very similar thing, but it's the sort of thing that just gets in your rotation when you're young and stuff. Yeah, it's definitely something that you can gets me into that 80s mode, talking about the music in the opening when they do the Transformers song, more than meets the, that one, when the robot part comes in, the robots in disco, that one, I pump my fist, yeah, all right, let's do this, I mean, so many nostalgia things we've looked at on this podcast, I guess, I don't know if it carries the weight if you didn't have it when you were young, I suppose, and if I had kids, I don't know if I'd show them this movie expecting them to be into it. But I think that it does set the groundwork for the newer Transformers movies. I mean, I think Transformers 1 or whatever just came out last year or 2 years ago. And it's very much the idea of these movies that you see as a kid that then become part of your foundation or something. And I think it's interesting looking back on the versions of them from different eras and stuff.
So I did show my kids this film, and they watched it all the way through, but they had no connection to what they were watching. And I don't think it really stuck with them, but I gave it a go.
You mentioned the 40th anniversary of tour. I noticed that for the 35th anniversary, they did a 4K restoration on Blu-ray for the Transformers. I watched it on this one on YouTube because it's up there at the moment. Michael, have you seen that 35th anniversary one?
No, I've got it on DVD, but pre that restoration. So yeah, my copy's older. So no, I've not seen that.
Right. And the Michael Bay Transformers movies, I have seen precisely none of those. Michael, you must have gone and seen them.
So I saw and enjoyed the first one, enjoyed it quite a lot. Went to see the second one, really, really hated it, and have never gone back since. So I don't know how many there are. I've seen Bumblebee, but the rest of the Michael Bay ones I've avoided like the plague. Did not enjoy.
Conrad?
I've seen a bunch of them. I think I remember very briefly I wrote a movie blog or something like that, and I wrote one for what I think the Transformers movie that had Mark Wahlberg in it, I guess, and it was just the Last Night, I think, was that one, but was just those movies, their special effects can be amazing, but they're also just very infuriating movies just in terms of, like, I don't know, just like sometimes you can feel like a movie doesn't really respect you as a viewer, I guess. And that's what I would say the Michael Bay Transformers movies are. Like, that's their defining feature, I guess. Like, you know, like, I feel like they, like, you know, you're trying to hit like dopamine buttons in here, but like, this is not like, you know, this is not respectfully made of my time and my intelligence. You know?
Obviously, we've talked, Michael, about the Marvel UK Transformers comics, which continue on after the movie. Is some of their success down to the feeling about the movie, or is it a lot to do with Simon Furman, Jeff Senior, and people like that working on the comic?
I think it's both, because the US comics largely ignore the film. It's set in the future, so they just carry on as is, which gave the UK comics an opportunity to take a bit of control. So, like, as the film was coming out, the UK comic was running a story written by Simon Furman featuring the characters from the film who traveled back to 1986, and were basically trying to affect the events of the film. And then from that point on, very regularly, Galvatron, Cyclonus, Scourge, Rodimus Prime, Ultra Magnus would be in the UK comics and not in the American comics. And they became major characters, and it gave them a real free reign because they could do a lot more with what they liked because there was no contradictions. Eventually, when Simon Furman takes over the US comic, he does the same there, and he pulls all of those strands together from the film, from the UK comics, from the American to that point. And so the final sort of arc of the American comics before it ends is Unicron returning to Cybertron and a huge battle, and a Galvatron for another timeline, I think it is, comes in to sort of bring all those things together again. It's really drawing on the love and the nostalgia people have from that film and pulling it into the comics. So yeah, for me, it was a huge part of the film was a huge part of the success of the UK comics.
Conrad, do you have any experience with the Transformers in comics?
Not really, actually. I remember seeing them, but they definitely wasn't one, like, they weren't ones that I read as a kid. I think, because I think I'm a little younger, I sort of skewed younger in my comics reading and stuff. I think when a lot of these, like, I might have started with, like, tie-ins to, like, sort of younger kids' cartoons, like those comics when I was, yeah. When I was younger, like a lot of like ALF comics or something, and then moved on to sort of regular superheroes, I guess, and didn't read a lot of Transformers stuff. I definitely know there's a deep well of Transformers comics and like stuff going on in there for sure. It's not definitely not one that I haven't. It's a path I have not walked down very, very deeply, I must admit.
So people might be tempted by the 40th anniversary tour. They might be tempted by the DVD or the Blu-ray, or I noticed the 35th anniversary limited edition Steelbook, which is still available on Amazon. So the big question is, should people check it out? Should they show it to their kids as well? What do you think, Michael?
Well, Eamon, did you not seen it from back in the day?
I'd never seen this before. Okay, limited experience with any Transformers apart from those comics you and I did.
So if you watched it and loved it back in the day, then yes, check it out and watch it again, because it will bring back a load of memories, and try and make your kids watch it if you wish. In terms of should somebody who doesn't have any of that history take the time to try and understand what on earth is going on, I think that's one probably for you to answer. It feels like that would be a pretty tough watch to me.
Yeah, that's a question I should ask you, Eamon.
Well, I'll do mine now then. I will say that, as you two have clearly intuited, I had no idea what was going on in either of these movies that we're going to be talking about. I was completely baffled, but I have no history with the Transformers apart from discussing comics with you, Michael. So it's perhaps not for me. I'm not getting the 35th anniversary Steelbook or the 40th anniversary tour. But Conrad, what do you reckon for people who saw it back in the day? Should they look at a nicely restored version?
Yeah, I mean, I want to say I feel like there's a funny way where this movie is or this kind of movie is similar to the last episode we did, Eamon, the Sweeney, where like in both of them, I dragged my dad semi-unwillingly to watch the movies. Whereas we did, you know, it was watching the screening in 2025 versus forcing my dad to watch these movies in the 80s, you know? Yeah, I mean, like I said, like, if you have nostalgia for this movie, it's worth a look just to kind of say, just to be like, I mean, just to sort of silence some Mandela effects if you're sort of like thinking about it, just like, you know, did you remember this right? Like, what's going on in here? That kind of stuff. I think it's always interesting to rewatch things that you watched as a kid, as an adult, just to kind of see what's going on there and stuff like that. But like I said, like, you know, if you're sort of going for kids, like, you know, there's so much more modern Transformers media or like things of this kind. I think kids today would probably be more into that, I think, than this classic stuff, I guess. And like, as much as we'll joke about, you know, the trauma of these character deaths and stuff like that, obviously, if you don't really know the characters or you don't, you know, you haven't like played with these toys, you don't have these things, then it's very, like, it's very easy to make fun of and very easy to kind of be like, you know, like, what's your problem here? And, you know, I certainly admit that, but I think part of the fun is making a big deal about it, I guess, is kind of like, is taking it seriously. Like, that's sort of part of the fun of watching it. I think it's still fun as a nostalgia watch, but if you don't have the nostalgia, then, ooh, it's pretty missable. It's a better version of this kind of thing. There's definitely worse options for like movies about 80s toys, but this doesn't have to be on your list of like things you should watch, you know, if you don't have the history with it, I think.
Okay, well, we have a new film club sort of subgenre, which is the cinematic damage that Conrad can inflict on his dad in the name of these films.
Basically,
yes. I will say I'm pretty sure I've seen in American films references to the You've Got the Touch, You've Got the Power, you know, music. That certainly seems to have been, you know, has been parodied, I think, from time to time. Michael, any final notes on Transformers the movie from 1986 before I move us on at the halfway stage?
I think it just to make it clear for people who haven't seen it for a while, how bloodthirsty it is. I mean, it is crazy. I mean, the planet that Unicron eats at the start, it literally kills every single person on there except one who escapes. Later, that fella gets eaten by a bunch of robot sharks. I mean, it just nobody gets off the hook. It is crazy how much death there is in that film.
Yeah, and there's definitely scenes of like them, of like the Decepticons attacking like a Autobot ship and just like, you know, like shooting dudes and like killing them in a way that doesn't really happen in kids' cartoons very often. You know, like G.I. Joe, people shoot 1,000 bullets and nobody ever gets hit. You know, you actually take people out by like getting close and punching them in the face. To actually see these Transformers be shot and die because of it is like pretty wild, actually, as far as these things go.
And to kill off the main character, turn him gray and have his head turned to one side, and Optimus Prime dies. Spoilers, 40 years ago, but yeah. Okay, well, that was Transformers the movie from 1986. We stick with 1986 as we transform from car robots to rock robots and go to...
Film 2, GoBots, Battle of the Rock Lords.
Written by Jeff Siegel, directed by Ray Patterson, Don Lusk, and Alan Zaslav, including the voices of Margot Kidder, Roddy McDowall, Michael Nouri, and, as Conrad said, Telly Savalas. So, before Conrad tells us what the heck's going on with this film, Michael, a little background. So we've got Transformers. Who are GoBots?
So it's a very similar story. It's a different American toy company picking up transforming robot toys from Japan. They're actually first to market in the US over Transformers. In this case, Tonka, picking up Japanese toys and giving them names and stories. And they were a success, but pretty soon overpowered by Transformers. And soon after the film we were discussing, start to disappear. I do think that there was the key difference between the two is that lack of sort of narrative logic that Transformers have, as much as it does have that, that Bob Budiansky gave it by giving those bios on the back of all the toys. GoBots didn't have those. By getting that comic up and running that was tied to the toys, GoBots doesn't have that in the same way. So it just, it didn't have the same coherence. So they exist as toys and they exist somewhat as characters, but that it they don't have the same personalities as the Transformers do, and so they don't resonate with the audience in the same way.
And we'll link these to British comics directly in a couple of ways. Let's do the first one before we get the plot, because predating this movie, not only have they got a cartoon series, they appeared on the cover of 2000 AD Prog 329.
Yeah, as Robo Machines, which is another thing with the GoBots, is lack of coherence, is that they've got different names in different countries. So in the UK, they were called Robo Machines, and they were on the front, as you say, for a competition of 2000 AD. And then there was also a Robo Machine story in the rebooted Eagle comic,
which I'll ask you about in a minute. But then, as we say, so they've got, again, we've got toy line, we've got a TV show, we've got some comic appearances. We get to 1986 and we get this movie. Conrad, over to you for the synopsis on this one. What the heck's going on in GoBots Battle of the Rock Lords?
You know, I can't summarize GoBots Battle of the Rock Lords better than the song at the end of GoBots Battle of the Rock Lords to explain what's going on. So I'm just going to sing that briefly. Rock Lords, Rock Lords, rocks that come alive. Rock Lords, fighting to survive. Living rocks with strength and might, rising up to crush and fight. Rock Lords, powerful living rocks. Yeah, so that's basically it. You know, so like it's actually funny how similar these movies start, because GoBots also starts with the GoBots on their planet, on their like robot metal planet, but they've won and have sort of defeated the renegades and sent them packing, basically, until Meteorite shows up and there's a sexy rock lady inside it, played by Margot Kidder. And she sort of does the standard, my planet needs help. You know, here's the call to adventure. Will you help us? That sort of thing. And then the renegades, the GoBots say, sure. The guardians, I guess, because they're all GoBots. So I guess, but the good guys say, sure, we'll help you. The bad guys are like, ooh, maybe we should go instead and steal the power of this evil guy. There's some fighting and like mutual kidnapping and things like that. They go to the rock planet. There's a new bad, you know, there's bad guys and political machinations on the rock planet, but mostly just a lot of shooting, transforming into rocks and things like that. This leads to a big trek across the rock planet. Lava is involved, as well as a giant rock monsters, which are also available for purchase, and culminates in a big showdown. You know, the day is saved, and there's a lot of talk of, we haven't seen the last of these rock lords, but I think that that is in fact the last that we see of the rock lords.
I mean, the problem with the rock lords is they turn into rocks.
100%.
And that is quite helpful. The one time when the lava is falling from the sky, it actually looks quite helpful. At all other points in the film, turning into rocks is just really stupid. And there's a point where they're trying to get away, and the GoBots turn into their vehicles and fly away, and the Rock Lords turn into rocks and then roll away.
Yeah.
And some of them are square rocks, and you're like, how are they rolling? And what if they had to go uphill? What are they going to do then?
There's fighting, like they fight the big dinosaurs, and it's like, oh, we'll turn into rocks and throw ourselves at them. And it's like, okay, it's all very much like, and Eamon, you've referred to this already, but that one scene in the movie Big, where Tom Hanks is playing, you know, is in like the business meeting, and they're rolling out like the building, this like Empire State Building transformer, and he makes the point of like, buildings aren't fun on their own. Why don't you have them be robots that are fun and then turn into something else that's fun, as opposed to they turn into rocks, which like you can throw it at your brother or something like that. But that's basically that's basically the end of what a rock is capable of doing, you know?
The level of writing on that does feel a little bit like it is a battle between kids with their toys. Well, mine's going to turn into a rock and then I'm going to throw it at you.
Exactly.
Or throw it at your robots.
Right. But the synopsis basically, yeah, like they, you know, these new characters come to this rock planet. They travel about. They meet a bunch of, you know, they meet a whole bunch of characters. But it's all just sort of like, here's different toys you could buy, basically. They all turn into rocks. There's a, you know, they're sort of gathering up power scepters to make the ultimate weapon. And in the end, evil is vanquished and the good guys are victorious. And that's basically it. Like, it's very, like, when I talked about in Transformers, how, like, it seems like there was effort made and it was sort of not trying to just be, like, sort of slop for kids, basically. That's very much as opposed to this, which really does feel like not a lot of effort was made for this slop for kids, basically.
I noticed it's a Hanna-Barbera production animation. And so you get that very, what seems to me, that very sort of Hanna-Barbera TV animation where you get a fixed background.
Mm-hmm.
You've got characters, particularly when they're doing the speaking, they're not going to move very much or at all. There isn't that much animation in a way. Michael, I mean, it's a sort of quite distinctly different form of animation from the Transformers movie, isn't it?
Yeah, and look, I've got to be careful because I've got no love and nostalgia for this one, so maybe I'd feel differently about it if I did, but it's rubbish, isn't it? I mean, yeah, it looks... I think I've seen the GoBot cartoon a few times and it looks exactly the same quality, exactly the same amount of money and effort that was being spent on the Saturday morning cartoon went into this film, and they just did it for longer. That Scooter character, Jar Jar Binks' Scooter character, is so annoying all the way through. I really struggle to give it much credit for anything, but I'm aware that actually plot-wise, it is not hugely dissimilar to Transformers the movie, and that there is a lot of chasing around and then having a fight and then chasing around and then having a fight. It's just in this case, it looks rubbish and I don't care.
Roddy McDowall, another sort of golden age of Hollywood, I think is voicing that Scooter character. Is that right?
No, I think he's Nugget.
Nugget, he is. Sorry, yes. I was like getting confused. Yeah, Nugget.
Basically, Margot Kidder is Princess Leia and Nugget is sort of a combination of R2-D2 and 3CPO.
Yes,
because
he is.
A small robot, but he is also gold. So the toy was like a gold nugget, like shiny golden plastic guy. So he's sort of R2 and C-3PO in one, essentially.
And Telly Savalas does the bank guy.
I love Telly Savalas as the bad guy. I feel like as Magmar, I think him and the guy and the standard GoBot villain Psykill, those two guys are so literally cartoonishly evil, I suppose, are pretty fun. Just in terms of just like they're always laughing evilly. There's a point where they meet and Psykill introduces himself and says that I'm known throughout the galaxy as a friend of the oppressor, a champion of the evil cause. There's a certain appreciativeness of like black and white thinking there, of sort of being evil, knowing that you're evil and being really into it, you know, that sort of silly stuff. And I think like that was my favorite part to this movie, was just when these two bad guys are out bad guying each other, basically.
Yeah, Psykill is a lot more fun than Leader One, I agree.
Conrad, is this one, again, that you have a lot of nostalgia from? Were you more familiar with these from your youth, the GoBot?
I remember, I've got a very vivid memory of watching this movie at a friend's birthday party projected on screen at a Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh, nice.
When I was like 6 or 7 or something like that. What I remember also sort of throughout the movie, there are these woolly mammoth elephant toys, which was sort of like, while the regular rock GoBots were or rock lords, we were like sort of plastic rocks, basically. These guys were sort of like furry and had like, yeah, were sort of like little like stuffed animals, basically, which were kind of, which a girl would have those, whereas a boy would have the rocks or something like that. GoBots very much the off brand to Transformers, I think. As I said, actually, on Space Spinner, episode 101, when we talked about the cover on Prop 329, GoBots are the Transformers that your mom buys instead of actual Transformers because they're cheaper, basically.
Right, okay.
They're very much like that internet meme of, like, we have Transformers at home, GoBots are the Transformers at home, basically. They're sort of the inferior copy, basically. If some kid just had GoBots, they could be made fun of or something. I don't know. And the movies very much play that out as well, where it just feels like an inferior copy of the Transformers movie.
Or robo machines, as they were over here, apparently.
Or, yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Michael, not even a good, apart from Conrad's version of the final song, the music isn't that great or anything like that either, is it?
No, I think I would prefer to just re-listen to Conrad singing the song than re-watching the film.
Yeah, that's probably the outro.
It's mostly just the standard action animation, strings and sort of standard cartoon background music, I guess. Not like the multiple songs in the Transformers movie, you know.
The idea that this was in cinema, I can't believe this was in cinemas. It's not worthy, right?
Now, for this one, there isn't a 40th anniversary tour. There isn't a steelbook. In fact, we couldn't find this legitimately anywhere. And so we ended up watching it on Facebook. Is that, Michael, is that because Hasbro now own the GoBots and have sort of shelved them because they want to go with the Transformers?
Yeah, so, I mean, considering that they were big enough in 1986 to release their own film, but 1987 was the last year that new GoBot toys were released. So this was the tail end of them as a toy line. Transformers just became totally dominant. And in the 90s, as you say, Eamon, Hasbro bought the rights to GoBots. So now Hasbro owns them all. And since then, there's been a level of crossover in toys and in media. I believe that a couple of the GoBots have appeared in some of those Michael Bay films that we were discussing earlier in one way or another, but they've been pretty much phased out because I think largely people don't care in the same way, right?
Okay, but they might care, as you say, that the GoBots or were they known as the Robo Machines in New Eagle comic?
Yeah, Robo Machines. So this is November 84 to July 85. So this is pre-film. This is pre the cartoon appearing in the UK as well. So they were called Robo Machines. They've got the same character names that the toys have because those belong to the toys, but the lore is entirely different, which sort of doesn't help, as I say, with people caring about who these toys are. So they're from Gobotron in the film, and they're from Robotron in the Eagle. And actually in the Eagle story in Robotron, humanoids and robots live side by side. And then for one reason or another, they end up going to Earth, as is always the case. And there's a few of them that are trying to invade the Earth and a few of them trying to protect the Earth, mostly in and around Birmingham and East Anglia. There's a huge amount of the story is based around a young boy with ESP powers, which is often the case in the 80s, a Wolfie Smith type called Charlie Bampton. In a bloodthirsty way, again, his parents are killed and his school is destroyed quite early on. And then he takes tries to take revenge against the baddie robots and supports the goodie robots. But the robots themselves are pretty bland, and it's humanoid characters that are leading the way. This runs for two series, and by the second one, I think that it's that maybe the TV show has now appeared because they start to look a bit more like the toys look on screen, and the characterizations start coming through a bit more. All of this is written by Tom Talley. Originally the art's by Mario Capaldi, but the majority of it is by Kim Raymond, who obviously did a lot of work on Judge Dredd. And actually his work here in the Robo Machines, I was never a fan on the Judge Dredd, but his work on Robo Machines works pretty well.
So that's in the New Eagle, if you can track that down. Yeah, I mean, Kim Raymond and Tom Tully, those are two sort of very reputable names from British comics. Sounds more interesting than the film.
Well, it's not that interesting. I mean, it's okay. it's okay. And obviously, it benefits from only being a few pages long each time, but it's a right. pretty basic toy cash-in. It's hard. Would I have liked it when I was eight? I'm not sure, but I'd like to think I would be more discerning, and the Transformers comics I was reading at the same time had a bit more to them than Robot Smash.
So, Transformers the movie, if you've got nostalgia for it, it's certainly worth tracking it down, particularly in one of the sort of like newer restored versions that you can get. GoBots, Battle of the Rock Lords. It sounds like, Conrad, even though you suggested this one for us, it sounds like we're not particularly recommending this film.
I mean, no. I would say you've got a better. There are so many better uses of your 80 minutes of your life, or whatever 60 some minutes of your life than watching this movie for sure. I think it is interesting as a historical document again of just sort of if you want to sort of see like a there's a Sturgeon's Law, right, which is like 90% of everything is crap basically, and so. If somebody gets a little bit over their skis about like how in the 80s people respected kids and all the kids movies were great or something like that, it's very much like maybe I should introduce you to my friend Battle of the Rock Lords here. And you can see sort of what a lot of the media of the time actually was, as opposed to just what survived over the last 40 years to sort of be what we're remembering and what sort of being in the in the halls of nerddom and stuff. But like beyond something like that, I guess it's sort of like not just like missable, but like you should miss this. Don't watch this. It's bad. It's not even like a fun, like so bad it's good way, but more like in a like, oh man, these guys are really rocks, huh? Like, okay, I guess.
Rocks that can roll. Yeah.
Yeah, you've managed to get a lot of rock puns in the course of the writing of this. I'll certainly give you that, you know, but that's the primary thing, you know.
Michael, you're presumably not going to go to bat for the GoBots movie, but any final thoughts on that and and Transformers?
Is GoBots Battle of the Rock Lords the worst film you've ever watched on Mega City Film Club?
Oh, well, it's certainly the worst film I've watched it.
Ever.
Yeah. I said there's not a film that I've had less fun with, I think.
I think the rock puns, I'm glad you mentioned the rock puns, Conrad. I'd forgotten to mention that. There's a little bit of joy to be had in quite how many rock puns are crammed in. But
a lot of them.
They
definitely want to make it clear. They want to make it very clear that these characters are rocks. Like, you got to know that very, very quickly. There's a big torture device that's called the Tumbler. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, that's
like, basically. Oh, math.
I think I'd still rather watch the 2.5 adventures they have in Damnation Alley than the Rock Lords. Myself, Conrad.
Yeah, I mean, both do have murderous bugs, I guess, because there's that scene with all the cockroaches being pulled around on carpets in Damnation Alley, sort of. As good as the magnetic magnetic rock leeches that attack our heroes in this one, I guess.
Oh yes, yeah, that's right. They get sort of strange robot bugs. Michael, closing thoughts on Transformers as a franchise?
Yeah, so look, I think GoBots paints Transformers in a very good light. both at the time, I think in the 80s, and I think that's the reason why people are still buying toys, watching cartoons, watching films about it now, because of those characters. I think it is about the characterization. It's about the story. The toys were pretty cool as well, but I think that's what Transformers got right there, working with Marvel and creating characters that people care about is why 40 years later, we're talking about an anniversary tour for this film. And I don't think anybody really cared about the GoBots at the time, and they certainly don't care about them now.
Well, at least we can link both directly to having appeared in British comics, and in one case on the cover of 2000 AD, the proper British comic. So,
yeah, and I can't stress enough. It's too late now because you've listened to the whole episode. But if you do watch these movies, definitely watch GoBots first, and then watch Transformers. Transformers looks so much better after you've seen GoBots. 100%. I can't imagine watching GoBots after you've seen Transformers because, well, it's just, it really, like, it's bad enough on its own, but in comparison, I could imagine it being real, it really hurting, basically. So just be warned, be careful.
Thank you very much for that, gents. Michael, thank you for suggesting the Transformers movie for us. And I look forward to your return visit to the book club at some point.
Brilliant, yeah.
Thank you. In terms of links, you can find all episodes of the Film Club, including the episodes where Conrad's long-suffering dad has to watch some bad movies, at megacitybookclub.com. And you can find Conrad at...
Spacebitter 2000. We're on a hiatus right now as one of my co-hosts has to deal with just various things. But we're hoping to get back soon, and we're going into 1996. Prague 1000 looms, and with it, all manner of things. I'm very excited.
Excellent stuff. So if you have a film that you can link to British comics, if you can see through our transformed disguises, then maybe you too can join the Film Club. Email me, mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. And Conrad and I will be back with another film in about 3 weeks' time. We have some excitement to talk about.
Speaking of changing shapes and things like that, I suppose.
Exactly, yeah. Hint, hint. More transformations to come. So until next time, I'm Eamon.
I'm Conrad.
I'm Michael.
And we have been...
Mega City Film Club!
Rock, lords, rock, lords, rocks that come alive, rock, lords, fighting to survive, living rocks with strength and might, rising up to crush and fight, rock, lords, powerful living rocks.
Robots in disguise.
You got the touch. You got the power.